You're listening to Primetime Sports with Mike and John. Welcome to another week of Primetime Sports with Mike and John. I'm Jonathan Sawyer.
And I'm Mike DeSanto.
This week we have a lot of great topics, starting off with the Golden State Warriors and their 23-0 season so far.
The Heisman Trophy race.
Our top five sport movies. Who's the top five best college basketball teams in the Pac-12 and Big Ten? Our NFL preview.
The St. Bonaventure basketball teams.
And, of course, Bonnie Sports. Well, Mike, the Golden State Warriors are the top team in the NBA, obviously, with a 23-0 record, haven't lost. And it doesn't look like they're going to lose anytime soon. They're just playing great basketball all around, from the first guy to the last guy on the bench. Like, it's a total team effort, but also, you know, the reigning MVP, Stephen Curry, is playing lights out and doesn't look like he can miss. The basketball hoop looks like a big ocean to him when he's shooting into it, and it's unbelievable what they're doing. Do you think they can lose?
I mean, one would assume that they're going to lose at some point. You know, you get tired as the season goes on. You start, especially once you get towards playoffs, especially once they clinch a playoff spot, you'd think that whether it be Luke Walton, if he's still there, or if Kerr comes back, that whoever the head coach is, that he would sit guys like Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green and Andrew Bogut to keep them fresh for the playoffs. But if they play the whole year and they keep playing like they are right now, I can't see them losing any game. I mean, you and I were talking before this. They're not averaging. They are putting up 100 or more points in every game so far this season, in 23 games.
I mean, the lowest points a game is 100. Like, that's the lowest mark, and that was against the Memphis Grizzlies back on November 11th. And, yeah, I mean, looking at their schedule, what they have coming up right now, tonight they play Boston at the TD Garden at 7:30. Then they got Milwaukee, Phoenix, Milwaukee again, Utah. And what I've been hearing is that Kyrie should be back for the December 25th game against Cleveland, at home against Cleveland. If they're going to get a loss, that's when they're going to get it.
I was going to say, I'm really in Shumpert. Like that's their next chance.
I'm in Shumpert. It just got cleared to play today. He's cleared to, he's all ready to go. He's going to be in the lineup. So bringing those two back is huge for LeBron, but also I think that's the team that's going to give them their first loss, personally. I think they could go 80-2. Bold prediction, but I think they can go 80-2. They're looking at their schedule. They don't really have anybody else except San Antonio, maybe Chicago. Miami could give them a run for their money. Dallas, but I don't know. It's very hard coming down. The Clippers late in the season over end of February, it's not looking like a lot of teams are going to contend with them. I mean, they're going to play some good teams in March, from San Antonio to Los Angeles to Dallas to Washington. Utah's looking good this year. They're going to play some tough teams coming down the stretch. I mean, the last four games of their season is San Antonio, Memphis, San Antonio, Memphis.
So it's a tough four games down the year, huh?
Yeah, two at home, two at either of the Memphis and San Antonio's home arena. Yeah. But, I mean, I can't see them losing too much. The way they're playing, the way they're working together as a team, I don't think they'll sit them, personally, coming down the stretch. You don't want to – I never believed in that. I always thought that was really unfair of coaches to do that to players, especially in the NFL. NFL is a little bit different because they only play 16 games a year. You can afford to sit some guys, but I never believed in it. I always said play them until they get up like 50 or 60. Like if it's
right,
six or 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, you're up by 50. You know, yeah, pull your starters and put the backups in, but play the starters until you are up by that much. I feel. Like, Popovich has a great mind for it. I don't, and this is going to be bold of me, but I don't think that the Warriors are going to repeat. I think San Antonio is going to take them in seven. San Antonio's got a tough team. They got a deep team. I think it's going to be San Antonio and Cleveland in the finals. I'm changing my prediction because right now San Antonio is playing some good basketball. From first, from the starter, like, and everyone doesn't think that. No one thinks that that's possible, but.
I mean, I think it's possible, but you say playing top to bottom great, and like you opened with it. Nobody's playing top to bottom as well as Golden State is right now.
No, I exactly, but San Antonio is right up there with them. I think if them. The Cavs, they only have 5 losses, but they're a total team. They could play up and down with the Cavs. I mean the Warriors. It's gonna be tough, but
I could definitely agree with the series going to 7 because I think that both teams will challenge them. I just think that if they keep playing the way they are and they stick to the system that they're playing in right now, I don't think anyone can beat Golden State. I think they are repeating because. I mean, I know it's only 23 games in, but then again, it's 23 games in which they've won every single one of them. We're a fourth of the way through the season.
Personally, like I just don't see. I haven't seen who they've. They haven't played anybody really. I mean, they played all the bottom feeders of the divisions. I mean, the one team that probably they played that's the Clippers, where they only won by 4 back on November 4th, and the Memphis Grizzlies. Other than that, they haven't really played anybody that can contend with them. I mean, the Chicago again played on November 20th, and they only lost 106-94. So my thing is, yes, they are 23-0. They're a good team, but they haven't played anybody that's going to play the same system that play basket for basket for with them. And I feel like the second half of the schedule after the All-Star game is going to get very tough for them. And that's when their losses are going to come. Like I said 80-2 is very possible if they continue to play. If they show up the Cavs on Christmas Day and beat them by 20 or beat them pretty badly or beat them, even if they just beat them, I can sit here and say, okay, maybe they'll win 75, maybe they'll win 77. I think they're going to win 80 personally because I feel like they want it enough. And they're all just playing good basketball. But... like I said, don't be surprised if they come out with 5 or 6 losses out of the season.
No, I think 80-2 is possible. I definitely think they're breaking the record this year by the Bills.
Most likely.
Well, they only need, I think, 73 or 74 wins to do it.
Yeah.
So, that's...
do you think it's right for them to sit their starters?
I think... no, unless I agree with you, unless it's a big lead late. I think you sit them. I think if you have, at this point, the way they're playing, I think you can sit them with like 5 to 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter if you're up by like 20.
Yeah, I just never believed in sitting the starters in the beginning of the game. Greg Popovich does it. I mean, they spanked a team the other night by playing their bench. But
with the Spurs, at times you have to sit them because they're an older team right now. Your stars are older, so it's not like you're sitting young starters who don't have as much of a risk of getting hurt.
I mean, he was doing that back when Tony and Tim and Manu were all young. He was doing that way back then. So I'm not saying that, like, he's been doing that his whole career. Like, he doesn't play everybody all the time. He has different lineups he comes through. That's his team. Everyone on that team should better be learning how to play good basketball because that's why he brings them there. And that's pretty much why he has such a deep team. He plays everybody and gets them their minutes. And, I mean, even the farthest one on the bench still gets playing time. He plays 13, 14 guys a night in the first half of the season, usually.
Right.
When it comes down to stretches, when he starts cutting it down, it starts eight or nine guys.
Right. I think, in the end, I think whoever the head coach is, if whoever that is really thinking about sitting starters, there's two of them that you cannot sit. Can't sit Curry and you can't sit Thompson.
Why?
Because I feel like...
if they have 70 wins, why can't you?
Because you need to keep them shooting so they stay hot. If they're shooting... if they're on the hot streak of shooting, you need to keep...
I mean, he's going to be hot regardless.
I just think... I'm a proponent of you play... And it has to do with most sports. You play hot hands.
Well, so yeah,
if Curry and Thompson are shooting well, I think you have to get them... I guess you could say the reps. You have to get them their shots so that they keep form. Because I feel like if they sit on the bench too long, not that they're bad shooters at all, they'll pick the form back up, but they might not be able to open games like you want them to, and that can cost you.
I disagree with you, because I don't think if you sit him, even if you sit him for a week, he's still putting up shots, and he's still putting up shots in the gym, and he's still going to be the same Steph Curry from when he left a week ago. So personally, I don't agree with that. I think he's one of the greatest shooters to ever touch a ball.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
He is, if not the greatest to ever touch the ball, but he. I don't think he loses form at all because he's just so young and so talented that he works so much on his shot that I don't think he would lose touch. But, I mean, here goes back and forth. It sounds like I'm going back and forth because I am. I don't have a correct answer because I don't know. So I like Popovich and how he does his ways and the way he's been doing it for years. I mean, yes, he has an older team. He's doing that because of that, but he hasn't been doing that. He's been doing that his whole coaching career. So, I mean, that doesn't really play a role to him. I mean, he was doing that with David Robinson and Tim Duncan were there. He was hitting the starters first half of the season, then playing them heavily in the second half. I mean, yeah, you want to save your legs, but he wants to save everyone's leg. It's not just Tim and Tony and Manu. You got to save Kawhi's. You got to save Danny Green's. He's got to save everyone on that roster, you know, Matt Bonner, everybody, because everyone's got to have legs going into the playoffs. Everyone's got to have a shot. Everyone's got to play. And it's not just the older veterans. It's everyone. So, if anything, he's got to sit, you know. Yeah, I say, you know, he can get away with sitting Clay because Curry can handle it on his own. And I think Clay can handle it without Curry. I think both of them are good point guards, and they both can. I think Clay's more of a shooting guard, but I think he can play the guard position without Steph there, right, if they need to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think late in the year, they're going to have to be really careful. They have to have a prescribed system. They have to keep to that system. I mean, I think for...
What do you mean by system?
You have to, like, a rotation system, and you need to make sure that you're not tiring out important pieces going into the playoffs, that you save some of them, but that you don't... Because there are guys on that team that might lose form. If they don't play. So I think it's all for any playoff team, I think.
But once playoffs comes on, you know your role. Like,
right,
you're not going to have Draymond Green shooting threes like he has been.
Exactly.
He's going to be down low playing the big position. You're not going to have your big guy coming up and, you know, shooting mid-range jumpers. You're going to have him in the post and try to play more of a systematic basketball. I always said this for years that the NBA is more of the first half is just getting the team, see who your good players are, rotating in a lot of players to see who is. And then the second half of the season, you know, you're still doing that, but then once March hits, that's when you're winding down who's going to be there for me for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got five on the bench. I got five on the floor, three on the bench that can play. This is their role. This is what they're going to do. This is what, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
I've always believed in that's what the coach's philosophy is. Especially for the good teams like Dallas, San Antonio, you know, LA, Clippers, Cleveland, Miami, Chicago, all those teams.
Right.
Right now, Chicago, the East, you can't really sit anyone. I mean, LeBron takes his nights off and that's when you've seen the team fall apart because there's no one really on that team. But with the Warriors, they can have Steph take a night off or a couple of nights off if he needs to. And I think they can still win. Like, if they play, like right here in March, they have Los Angeles, Orlando, and Utah. He could sit those three games and still they could still get a victory out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you could sit Clay for Portland, Phoenix, and New Orleans, and then going into Dallas, San Antonio, Minnesota, Los Angeles, and Dallas, you play them too. It's just like a rotation. I think that's when Steve Kerr comes back and makes that call.
Mm-hmm.
But coming down the line, like, these last four games of the season is going to determine whether they're... Because San Antonio is only going to have a couple handfuls of losses. They're going to be right there knocking on the door.
Oh, absolutely.
And everyone's been putting them under the radar because... And I've told everyone, watch out for them because they're a good team this year. And no one believes it. That's why I think they're the only team that can take in the West that can take Golden State to 7 and beat them in 7. Especially with Popovich. He's way smarter than Kerr. No offense to Kerr, he's way smarter, and he's been there.
More experience.
He's played against Phil Jackson, you know, the greatest, one of the greatest coaches to ever coach. I mean, he's played against these great coaches and beaten them. So that's why I think that San Antonio is going to go 7 and take him and go back to the NBA Finals, personally.
I think they go 7 and the Warriors beat them by like a 3.
You think that?
Yeah. But I agree with you that the Spurs are the only team that can beat them, I think,
in a playoff series. Other than the Cavs. Those are the
other... Well, yeah, in the West, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only reason why I think the Cavs is because they don't play... Because, Chris Broussard brought up a great point that everyone's trying to play the Warriors game where they shoot threes and shoot threes. And a lot of these teams don't have the personnel that can do that.
Right.
And there's only a few teams out there that are not playing that type of game. And I personally think it's San Antonio. It's, you know, it's L.A. It's the Clippers, I mean.
Right.
It's Cleveland. They're not playing. I mean, LeBron doesn't need to play that 3 game. He can play any game he wants to play. If he wants to shoot most nights, he'll shoot. If he wants to drive the lane and get buckets that way, get hard fouls, that's what he's going to play. It all depends on how he's feeling and what type of defensive system he sees that night.
Right. And that's why I think the finals, what happened in the finals last year with the Warriors and Cavs, I think it's why it went down the way it was. And I think that's why one of the reasons, besides him being a very talented basketball player, why Andre Iguodala had such a good series is because since Kyrie was out, and I believe Shumpert was out, correct?
No, Shumpert was in.
Shumpert was in. Still, though, I think because Kyrie was out, you had Matthew Dellavedova, who's not a bad player, but...
Can't dribble.
And he couldn't stay with Steph.
I mean, he played him good. Played him good enough. He kept Steph in check for a lot. I mean, Steph hit his shots, but I don't think he played bad defense with him. I think he kept up with him perfectly fine. But personally, for a backup, for a third or fourth string guard backup, I thought he played very decent with him.
I think he played decent. I feel like LeBron was a little... I don't want to say, like, concerned exactly, but he had... Based on the roster they had to put on the floor at that point, without Kyrie there and without, I think, a deep enough team, LeBron, when he was on the floor, had to worry about more than one man.
Oh, yeah.
Which left, like, guys like Andre Iguodala, who you wouldn't exactly, because Curry and Thompson are on the floor with him, he wouldn't be your primary focus.
Well, once two of the guys gets covered, he gets open.
That's right, exactly.
And that's what they stuck with, and they figured that out game one. They knew that he was going to be open most of the time, so, hey, throw it to him.
Exactly,
Matchup is his, and I personally think that, you know, Andre Iguodala needs to stay on the bench, and he needs to play a six-man position.
That's the role he fills on this team right now.
Right now, I mean.
Harrison Barnes is the starting small forward. I think Harrison Barnes has proved he's a starting small forward.
Yeah.
But I think at this point in his career, Iguodala is okay with that.
Who's better? I say Iguodala, hands down.
Right.
But it's just like with the whole Deion Waiters thing. You know, obviously, you know, you're better than some of the guys that were on that Cleveland Cavaliers team when you were playing. No doubt. But you play better off the bench. It's just Rick Hartley. Back at Syracuse, he played better off the bench, and he kept getting attitude with it. But... I mean, we'll see what happens. I hope that they make some records, and which they will, and they'll break some. And, you know, they may lose 15 games. I mean, who knows? No one can really know at this time. But I think it'll be a heck of a playoffs once it rolls around.
Right. What's your final record prediction?
I said 80-2, but I think it's going to be like 78-4.
I was thinking around like 74-8.
Well, I wish the best for the Golden State Warriors and everything that they do the rest of the season. It's the end of the college football season, and you know what that means. It's the Heisman Trophy ceremony tomorrow night in New York. And the three finalists are Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, and Deshaun Watson. Right now, Christian McCaffrey holds the lead right now over Derrick Henry and Deshaun Watson, and rightfully so. And I think he should win it, personally, and we're going to go right into that, honestly. I think he was the overall player MVP for his team. If he doesn't do what he does this season, Stanford is nowhere where they are. I wrote that in the article that we published this week. And, you know, Derrick Henry had a great year, 2,900 yards, you know, almost 20 touchdowns. 23 touchdowns, 1,900 yards. I'm sorry. McCaffrey only had 1,800 yards and 8 touchdowns. But those 1,800 yards meant more for Stanford than it did for Alabama. Because Alabama had a great team overall. And they're playing in the college football playoff for that.
Right.
Deshaun Watson is also in there. He had 3,500 yards passing this season, 30 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. Not bad. Not bad at all. I would if any of my quarterbacks for any of my teams that I liked in Michigan or Syracuse throw for 3,500 and 30 touchdowns, I'd be very happy.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think this is a good Heisman finalist class. I think they all deserve it. I think one thing that makes McCaffrey stand away from Henry, even though he didn't have the same rushing touchdowns or yards as Henry, is the receiving. Henry, 10 receptions, 97 yards, no touchdowns. But McCaffrey, 41 receptions, 540 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So McCaffrey might be the more dynamic player. I think one thing that really stands out to me with Deshaun Watson is not only his passing, but his rushing. He rushed for almost 1,000 yards. He was 100 and so away from 1,000 yards and had 11 touchdowns rushing. So I think all three of them deserve it. I think if we're looking at the Heisman as what it traditionally has been looked at, which is the most valuable player, I agree with you. I think McCaffrey gets it because he was the most valuable player to his team.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, I think that it's very biased when it comes to the Heisman Trophy. I wouldn't be surprised if Derrick Henry gets it because it's very biased to SEC teams. Right. And, you know, not a lot of people have a lot to say about that. And I think it is. I really do. Unless Watson would have put up 3 interceptions, he would have won it.
Right.
But Henry, you know, he's an SEC guy. You know, he rushed for almost 1,900 yards, 23 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
That's a heck of a season for a running back. Yes, he only received, but he's not a receiving back.
Right.
That's the thing. He doesn't roll out and catch the passes. He very rarely does, but that's the other backs that they have, the other speedy backs that they have. But Christian McCaffrey, I mean, he was an overall, and you know, has nothing to do with anything. He just meant more to his team than Henry did. I mean, Watson jumps Henry in that instinct. I think that without McCaffrey, Stanford, again, is not in the position that they're
exactly.
not
in. Exactly. I know. I agree. I mean, and that's nothing against the rest of Stanford. I like Kevin Hogan as a quarterback out of Stanford.
I like him, but I don't.
I don't like him in the sense enough to say that he carried the team. McCaffrey carried the team.
No. I mean, the other finalists are Baker Mayfield, Dalvin Cook, Keenan Reynolds from Navy, Leonard Fournette dropped all the way to the bottom, and he was not happy about that. He said earlier this week he wasn't. The problem with Leonard is he didn't have an offensive line, and the thing is the 6 or 7 games, he was just running through teams. And the teams didn't have great defenses in Auburn, Syracuse, any of those teams. Mm-hmm. He was just running through them because he could. He faced an Alabama team who held them to 31 yards and no touchdowns. And, you know, that did hurt him. That game hurt him because that's a big team. That's where you gotta perform. As a Heisman Trophy winner, that's where you perform. And Derrick Henry beat him out that game. He rushed for almost 200 yards and 2 or 3 touchdowns. That's where playmakers come into play. It's those big games, those LSU-Alabama ones, those SEC championship ones. You know, I think he's a heck of a back. I just think he needs an offensive line in front of him. Keenan Reynolds out of Navy, great kid.
Mm-hmm.
Love the kid. I've watched him for the past 4 years. He's developed into a great quarterback. And I think he was more than deserving to be in this if he had a better season at Navy. You know, he didn't perform. He only had 964 yards throwing, 6 touchdowns. He didn't play that well. He did rush. What was his rushing statistics? I believe almost 1,000. So, you know, he had 5 touchdowns rushing against Eastern Carolina. So, he was well-deserving in the rushing category. You know, all the finalists are very Baker Mayfield, the way what he did to Oklahoma, especially in the beginning of the season. That was unbelievable. All these guys are willing to hold that trophy up on Saturday night, but the guy that should be holding it up is Christian McCaffrey. The guy that I think is going to is Derrick Henry.
I agree. I think McCaffrey should, but they'll probably give it to Henry, which, you know, I like I said, I think Henry deserves it. I just don't think he deserves it the most. So, yeah, I think McCaffrey will get it. I'm not going to be disappointed if any of the three of these guys get it.
I will. But I personally will. I'll be disappointed if anybody but McCaffrey gets the trophy, because I think he's well-deserving.
Okay.
He did everything that Stanford team needed him to do. I mean, Alabama, like I said, had other playmakers. Clemson had other playmakers. Yes, Deshaun Watson had almost 1,000 yards rushing, 3,500 yards throwing. Yes, he meant a lot to that team. But I think without McCaffrey at Stanford, you don't see Stanford at 10-2 or whatever they're at right now. They don't beat the Notre Dames and win the Pac-12 championship. I really don't see it. I see them being a 7-5 team because they weren't that good of a team. And he's a sophomore.
Right.
Now, about the SEC, do you see it as being a bias, a lot of the trophies?
I think so. I think it's play. I think it's a complicated bias, though, because I get it that you see a traditional better level, you could say, of competition. A lot of SEC teams are normally some of the higher teams in the country. So if you perform like Henry did against SEC teams who are higher up, it looks better because you did better. Like you said earlier with Fournette, you have to play against big teams, and he did. So, yeah, I think there's a bias in that sense. I definitely think they shy away from, unfortunately, from McCaffrey, Pac-12 players.
I mean, Matt Mariota did win it last year. Rightly deserving.
He
was the most outstanding player at all last year. I don't think Jameis Winston deserved it at all in the running. And if you watched the whole season, you know, he was hands down the best player in the nation.
And I'm glad they didn't shy away from the Pac-12 with that, because he did deserve it. And I hope that they shouldn't this year.
The last time the Pac-12 won it before him is Matt Leinart in 2004, because Reggie Bush got his revoked in 2005. I still say Reggie Bush is a Heisman Trophy winner.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
But, you know, there's no 2005 there, so the last one was Matt Leinart in 2004. But with that saying, in the past, 12 years or 10 years, you know, only four SEC players have won the Heisman. And, you know, this is, you know, it's a great ceremony. I love watching. I watch it every year pretty much. And I think they really take in consideration different players and different things that they do. I think they really take the time to understand. And I'm glad to see McCaffrey's at the top right now. I just don't think he'll win it. I think Henry will jump him, unfortunately. And, you know, that's the sad part, but it's going to be a good show tomorrow, and I'm excited to see who's going to win it, and I hope it's the running back out of Stanford. Well, Mike, moving on to the next part of our show, we have top 5 sports movies. This is a topic that you came up with, and, you know, it's good to get away from all the, you know, drama and sports and to get away from that and do a top five, you know, something crazy like this, sports movies, and
right.
see what everyone likes and see what we like. And so you go ahead and let me know what your top five is, going from 5 to 1.
Okay, so number five for me is a movie called 61. It's about Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle's race for the home run record in 1961, which Roger Maris eventually won. I think I like that movie just because it's a kind of true-to-life story. It shows, like, even the behind-the-scenes issues, like, Mickey and Roger had, where they were feuding about stuff, and Mickey had his drinking problems and stuff, which a lot of people that know about Mickey Mantle know about. So I think it's a nice movie. My number four is Rocky IV. Some people would say, oh, that's not a sports movie. Well, boxing's a sport.
So. I wasn't in a sports movie, though. That's my question.
How, isn't it a sports movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just heard that before. So
I think the whole Rocky series is.
Yeah, no, the whole Rocky series is good. My favorite's 4. That's why I have that there instead of any of the other ones. But yeah, it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. 3 for me is Moneyball. I like, again, the behind the scenes stuff about like baseball and how they had to orchestrate the team and stuff like that. It was really interesting to me to learn about that sort of story. 2 for me is Field of Dreams. It's because I'm a big baseball nut, and I'm a big history of baseball.
You don't like baseball.
That's all it's the middle of December and I'm still talking about baseball because the winter meetings just happened. So, but no, yeah, I like Field of Dreams. Again, good story. It's really good. And you know, number one, it's Miracle. I quote it all the time. It's the best, one of the best movies I think ever, because it's just so wonderfully done, and it's about one of the best moments in American history, sports wise.
I agree 100%.
Okay, what's yours?
Mine's number. My number five is Mystery Alaska.
I haven't seen that, but I've heard it's really good.
It's really good. It's about how the last people in Alaska play hockey on the pond,
mm-hmm.
and they bring the New York Rangers in to play them. Actually, yeah, you should be
okay. Happy. I should definitely watch this movie now. You should
watch it because the New York Rangers are in it, and all the guys are in it, and they play on the pond, and they end up. Oh, I'm not gonna ruin it, but
yeah, don't. But
it's a great movie. It just shows leadership, teamwork, a team that's underdogs the whole movie to this team, and you know, overcome a lot. In the movie. Tied with that, I have Rocky 1 through 3. I really like the Rocky series.
Right.
I think it's a movie. If anyone doesn't, you know, we can have that discussion. You know, just email me, you know, SawyerJP15@bonaventure.edu. You know, let me know. Number 4 is Friday Night Lights. I'm a big football head, so
mm-hmm.
Watching that movie, I would always get hyped before football games. Okay. You know, seeing the adversity they had when Boobie Miles went down with the injury, and you know, I like all the true story movies.
Not, right.
Number 3 is Coach Carter. I think I see myself as that type of coach when I officially coach when school's over with, and you know, I see myself as that hard-nosed coach that cares about academics but also cares about the men being men and holding themselves to a higher standard than anyone else. Number 2, and I also can see myself as this type of coach, is Remember the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest movies I think has ever been made. Just shows a tough time in Alabama when two teams, two different types of people, you know, blacks and whites, not getting along. And coming together as a team has unified kind of that county, that kind of that state, showing that, hey, it's okay, we're friends, you know. They back up each other at the end, you know, stuff like that. My number one is Miracle, because I'm a hockey player, and that is one of my favorite movies. I used to watch before every game to get hyped for hockey, and it's just amazing to see what odds against people can do to hype them up. And you see that, and you don't see any teams like this anymore. And all the teams I've seen that you see here, They're all underdogs. Mystery Alaska, Friday Night Lights, Coach Carter, Remember the Titans.
Right.
Miracle. Every team was underdogs. They're all in Rocky. In every movie he was in, he was an underdog. He got beat at least once, then came back, and you know, historical, you know, moves on. But that's one thing you don't see in sports anymore. You don't see teams who are underdogs of teams. So you're playing the first team in the state, and you're like, you know, 2-2. They're undefeated. They're 4-0. They give up. A lot of players. A lot of players don't see the potential in them beating that team. And, you know, you see that in a lot of sports these days. Even in college sports, you see it all the time. You underestimate people, and then they overcome it. And it's nice to see in these movies, and I would love to show this movie to all five of these movies to all my athletes in the future.
Right.
To show them that, look, it doesn't take talent to win games. It takes hard work and, you know, belief and the want. You gotta want to win. You gotta believe you can win, and you gotta just work hard to win. And that's been my motto my whole life. I've always been the underdog in everything I've done. So watching these movies have always motivated me to just work harder. And I think a lot of players, especially if you're at the bottom of the conference and you know you're not doing well, you know, you need this win to boost yourself up. You know, who says you can't beat the number one? You know, you see upsets all the time in college basketball, but I don't call them upsets. I call that team straight up beating that team and playing good defense. When St. Bonaventure beat VCU last year, VCU was ranked 18th. I don't think VCU was that good of a team, personally, but they overcame them, beat them in the Riley Center, and ended up knocking off a top team and making it on ESPN and everything. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think everyone's just got to believe in each other. And that's the biggest thing in sports nowadays. You don't see that. You don't see players believing. You know, if they stink this season, if they're not doing well, they just give up. I remember on my hockey team, it used to be all the time, you know, I used to hype them up, be like, hey, look, we're underdogs of this team. They're the number one team in the state. We skate them 1-0. In a game. You know, we skated the number one team in the state. We're number, like, 30. And we skated them 1-0. At their place. Like, that's an achievement. Yes, we lost, but you got to look at the positives.
Right.
And that's what I don't see in a lot of sports these days. And it's kind of sad to see. But, you know, I hope there's a change in type of what sports is becoming in the younger generation and showing that if you work hard and everything, that's what I'm going to produce to my teams. Is if you work hard, you believe, and you want to win, you will win.
Right. Absolutely. As in both of our favorite movie, as the great Herb Brooks said, you can't be a team of common men because common men go nowhere. You have to be uncommon, which involves putting in that work. You have to outwork a team. Yeah, you can't beat them. You're not going to beat them if they're more talented than you and you just give up. But you can outwork them and beat them.
You can't beat a team. You can't go town for town with a team that's very talented.
Right. But you can outwork them.
You can play their game and put it in exactly what Herb said, is shove it down their throats.
Exactly.
Because shoving it down their throats is like, oh. I'm going to give you an example. We played a team every single year in hockey.
Okay.
West Genesee High School. They were one of the best hockey teams in the state. Went 26-0 my senior year, beat us 8-0 in the semifinals games. They played a system where it was they ran three at the red line where the center ice is and would wait for you. They'd leave their defensemen there, leave their forwards at the blue line, and say, you got to get by us. No team. The only team that ever challenged them was a team called can't think of the name right now. But when we tried to play that game, it worked against them for a couple periods. We played that game. We played, you know, against them.
Right.
They were only up 1-0. They got one lucky goal in. And we lost that game 2-0 because we pulled the goalie and they scored an empty netter. But it just shows that if you play their game, you can get them off their feet.
Right.
And that's exactly what the USA team did against the Russia team. They hit with them. They skated with them. They got outshot by a lot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But they played every single minute with them. And that was the biggest thing in that movie was, can they play with him? And they did. Played all three periods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the biggest thing in sports today is that teams don't think they can play with each other. You know, it's very sad to see that in sports because a lot of players just give up if they're not good enough.
All right. And I think it also has a lot to do with that in today's sports, especially if you're losing, today's athletes easily lose trust in their teammates. And I think that's a big reason why, for the Miracle example, the U.S. team was able to stay with them because, yeah, they got outshot by a lot, but they trusted Jim Craig to keep them in it. They trusted that he was good enough to stop the Russian team and let everybody do what they had to do within the system to shove it down their throats. Today, it's like, well, if you have struggles, you immediately think that your teammate is always going to struggle and you don't trust him to either get out of the struggles or you don't help him. I think a lot of sports are becoming very much about the individual, which is, like you said, is very sad to see because any sport's a team effort. A lot of sports that look like an individual effort are a team effort. And I'll give you an example of that I've experienced personally. In high school, I was a swimmer. I was on the swim team. And you would think, based on what you've seen of swimming and what you know of swimming, that's a very individual sport, right? Because it's you're swimming by yourself for most of the events. Relays aside, you're swimming most of them by yourself. But I can tell you it's a lot different than that because if you don't have the support of your teammates, if you don't have help from the teammates of yours that are older than you or more experienced than you, then it's very difficult to grow in the sport and it's very difficult to do well. Because I had races where I had a bunch of my teammates at either end of the pool screaming at me to go faster or giving me tips mid-race on what to do, slow up, you know, speed up, do this, do that. And I've also had races where I didn't have that. And a majority of the time, the races that I didn't have it were far worse races than when I did. So I think that sports as a whole, very team effort no matter what you're doing. Because you need the support of a team in a sport. You need someone to believe in you.
Even a sport like golf, tennis. Right. And bowling, any of those, you still have your trainers, you still have your coaches. You know, that's a team. That's part of it. Those duo mm-hmm. are a team. Right. And you need that support from them. And that's why you see in the tennis, you see their coaches in the ground. They always shoot to them in the crowd sitting there. Right. They're there. And
right.
I agree with you that, you know, teammates are the biggest thing that can bring you down or it can be the worst for your team. Or it can be amazing for your team. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of different groups in teams. I've been in a few locker rooms coaching.
Right.
You see that. You see segregating of three or four players and three or four players. And then there's one player over here by himself. And then there's a few other players.
Right.
You know, there's not that full bond mm-hmm. with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone's not going to like each other. But you got to get along when you're in the locker room. And that's what a lot of teams struggle with. And for anyone that's listening to this, you know, you can either take this advice from a couple guys that are in college, but I'm 23 years old and I've played mm-hmm. hockey almost 20 years, been in multiple different locker rooms to see different way players act, way teams act. And my most winningest teams were the teams that played together, never got down on each other, helped each other up, gave each other positive, negative feedback, and just were that helpful teammate even when that player had a bad game. Mm-hmm. My quarterback threw 5 interceptions in one game. We ended up winning off a game-winning field goal. Went over to him and said, hey, look, it happens. Move on.
Right.
There's nothing you can do. You threw the 5 picks. It's over with. I was playing third-string D-end, you know. I didn't play much because of reasonings, but, you know, having me come over and be a teammate for him, even though I don't play that much, showed him that, like, okay, blew it off. And went back through 300 the next game. It's just that little motivation to say, hey, look it. Don't get yourself down. It's okay. People make mistakes. You're a human.
Exactly. And anyone, like, your example of, yeah, you weren't the highest guy up on the team, but anyone can be a leader. It doesn't matter. because when you're a true team, everybody's voice matters. And I agree, for those of you out there that are in sports and they're listening, and, you know, you might think that, yeah, we're not, if we're not playing sports right now, it doesn't matter. But it does. We have experiences. Like you said, you're 23 years old and you've been playing for hockey for almost 20 years. Like, that's experience. You've learned things. Mm-hmm. I'm 20. Yeah, I don't have as much experience. We've both been in, you know, locker rooms. We've both seen this kind of thing of this. We've both seen teams that work and teams that are all cliquey and segregated, like you said. And he's right. For those of you that want to take our advice, he's right. It's much better when you're a team. It all works, and it feels so much better when you're a team. Because you know that no matter what, you have your brothers, you have your teammates behind you.
Or sisters.
Or
family.
You have your second family. Exactly. Your team's your family no matter what. You might not like them all the time, but when it's time to be a family, then you put all your differences aside. It's like a regular family.
Yep.
You don't like each other all the time. You have disagreements. But when it's time to be a family and it's time to come together for something important, you do it because you trust each other. And I think that's big.
Well, Mike, we got sidetracked with the whole, you know, speech we had there for people. But, I think people would need to know about that. And I think sometimes athletes get away from seeing that. But let's move on to our college basketball top five. We'll start off with the Big Ten. It's been a little shaken up. The team that everyone thought was going to be the winner of the Big Ten is now third behind Purdue and Michigan State. Mm-hmm. So who's your top five?
I think it's interesting. I'm actually, I think, going to put Michigan at five for me. Mm-hmm. I think they're a quality team. They're always a team that I think gets better as the season goes on. So I think they're going to do well. I would put four. I'd probably put Indiana. Okay. Another team like Michigan, they always get better as the year goes on, and I think they're a quality team. Three, I'll put Purdue. They're undefeated right now. They're in second place, tied with Michigan State. I don't think, besides like Pitt and Florida, like we talked about beforehand, I don't think they really faced a lot of competition, and I think they might fall off near the end of the year, but I still think they're a good team. Two, I'll put Maryland. Their only loss is to North Carolina. And I think they're a quality team. Like you said, they were ranked, when they lost to North Carolina, they were ranked 2 in the country. So they have a lot of people behind them, and I think they're going to be a good team. And number one, Michigan State. I've never hid my admiration of how good I think Michigan State is. I'm a huge Tom Izzo fan. I think he knows how to make a team great, and they're showing it so far this year at 10-0. So I think that's my top five. What are yours?
Mine are Iowa, Indiana, Maryland, Purdue, Michigan State.
Okay.
I think the top three are correct right now. I think Maryland will finish behind Purdue. Purdue's got a good team. They got a big center, good shooting guards. Michigan State, obviously, is going to separate themselves from the Big Ten. I don't know if they'll lose in the Big Ten, personally.
I wouldn't be surprised if
they got to play a tough Maryland team. But that's at Maryland in February 6th. But other than that, they've been playing great basketball. Mm-hmm. Iowa and Indiana are right there. They're two great teams. Iowa played a great game against Iowa State last night. Indiana's, Indiana. They're going to play good basketball.
Right.
And they're going to be right there at the top five. So that's my top five. I think that they're going to play. It's going to be a competitive between those top five. But other than that, I don't see Michigan being a good team this year. Unfortunately, I'm a Michigan fan, as well as a Syracuse fan, but they're just not the Michigan team they have been. They lost Spike Albright to he decided to step away from his hip surgery and rehab that. But other than that, those are the five that are going to be the outstanding five, and I think those five right there are tournament teams right there. So I don't see them playing into too much. I don't see Iowa, Indiana, Maryland, Purdue, or Michigan State having too much trouble with the Big Ten. I think the games against each other will be tough.
Right. You're right.
But I see them separating themselves away from the Big Ten and, you know, moving away so they don't have to worry about anybody else. Moving on to the Pac-12. It's been a tough year for that really league. Has. But who's your top five?
This one's, like you said, it's they haven't had a good year so far. So it's a tough choice. I'd probably have to say my five is Oregon. I think Oregon is I mean, they're a quality team, and they have a cool court. I remember you and I were talking about it yesterday. They have a cool court. But I think they're a quality team. They're upgrading their program a lot. I think they've gotten a lot better. Number four, I'll put Colorado. I think that it's another program that's getting better. I haven't really known them to be, like, one of those top-flight programs. I think they can get there. I'll put USC at number three. I think USC is a team that's getting better. I think they're going to be a good team this year. I have them as one of my sleepers for the Pac-12. Number two, Utah. I think they're number two right now in the standings. I think they could hold out, I think. It's the Pac-12 is, I think, a very rising conference. And number one, I think the team that's going to separate themselves from the Pac-12 by the end of the year is Arizona. I think they're proving that they are one of those top-flight programs, and I think they're going to win the Pac-12. But I think I think the Pac-12 is interesting this year because they're a conference that isn't really going to produce a whole lot as far as, I think, success in the tournament. But I think they have a bunch of programs that are getting better and that could make tournament noise in, say, 2-3 years. So I think it's going to be interesting to see this year who does what. I think there's a lot of movers and shakers in that conference, and, like, anyone can finish anywhere at this point. So that's me.
Watching the Pac-12 this year has been very interesting for me. It's been different because the Pac-12 is going to be one of the most competitive conferences in college basketball this year. They got a lot of teams. Every team except Stanford is over 500 playing – great basketball. UCLA right now is my number five. They're at the bottom of the division, but they've been playing great basketball. They beat Kentucky, who was the number one team at the time. They're going to be right up there, probably around 5-4. I have Cal at number two, Oregon at number three, Utah and Arizona to finish 2-1. They're going to be a good conference this year. Arizona's not. I don't agree with you. I don't think they're going to run away with it. Again, I don't think they have the team to run away with it as they did in previous years. They got three teams in the top 25 right now. I think that's going to increase with – I think Colorado's going to be bumped down a couple. I think UCLA is going to move up once conference plays out. Mm-hmm. I don't see USC. I see USC in 2 years being a good team. But – you know, the Pac-12 is on the rise, like you said. They are one of the most up-and-rising conferences mm-hmm. right now. And Absolutely. The Big Ten right now is the most declining conferences. They only have five teams right now that I see that. And honestly, three of those teams can make it to the Elite Eight. I see Maryland, Purdue, and Michigan State making it to the Elite Eight. You know, Pac-12, I see UCLA being an Elite Eight team. I can see Cal being an Elite Eight team. I can see Arizona and Utah being an Elite Eight team. Possibly Oregon. I haven't watched a lot of their games to see them play. I know them from last year, watching them a lot. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of players who came back that are very talented and is a very good team. But right now, the Pac-12 is all knotted up right now. I mean, UCLA and Washington State and Washington are all at the bottom. But, you know, they only have 2 and 3 losses. So that whole division right there in conference is all up for grabs. So personally, I don't think that Arizona is going to run away with it. I don't and like I've said, I don't think they have the team for it. But watch out for the Pac-12. They're going to get probably 5 or 6 tournament teams. Well, next week we'll be talking about the SEC and the American Conference, and that'll be our final show next week, so we'll talk about those two teams. Right now we're going to be talking about the NFL preview, as we do every week.
As we do.
And as we both had it, I should be ashamed of myself for picking the Patriots over my Eagles, but it was kind of a no-brainer at the time.
At the time.
Watching that game, That was ugly by the Patriots. Amazing by my team. I don't know what team that was. If they played like that all year, they would have won. They'd be undefeated right now. But the Bills are going to Lincoln Financial to play the Eagles. What do you have?
Eagles.
Yep, me too.
They are coming off of an amazing win, but they played great, and let's face it, the Bills are worse than the Patriots. So.
Yeah, the Eagles too. I think they're going to dominate on defense, force turnovers from Tyrod. I think LeSean's going to go off, but I still think the Eagles are going to pull it out again and get their sixth win. It'll be 6-7 and take the lead in the division.
We'll see.
49ers Browns.
Ooh-wee.
Battle of the craps.
Yeah. Yeah, Browns. They're at home. We'll see what Johnny does. He's supposed to start, so.
Yeah, I got the Browns, too. I think Johnny playing is going to be good. I do think he's going to be off the roster coming next year, but.
He'll get a job somewhere.
I hope not. Lions, Rams.
Rams. I just think the Rams are a better team. Lions have played better.
I'm going to take the Lions. They've been playing great football as of late, and Stafford has been playing really good. The offensive line and defense has been coming together, so I think that's going to be a Lions victory in St. Louis. The Rams have been struggling lately also. Saints and Buccaneers.
Saints. They're a much better team. The Bucs are they're getting better, but...
Well, I have the Bucs because they're at home, and they've been playing amazing football as of late. And I think they're a better team than the Saints this year, as crazy as that sounds. Titans versus the Jets.
Jets, they're at home. And, again, the Titans are one of those teams I think are getting better, but the Jets are pretty good this year. So.
See, you always talk about home, and I don't think home plays an advantage in NFL. I personally don't think that plays an advantage. I think you know where, you know your field, but I don't know. I don't see it as being a home field advantage. I don't feel like the fans get into it like that, except like if you're playing in Seattle. But like other than that, like I don't see anybody like getting into it as much as that. That's just my opinion, but I'm picking the Jets too, so sorry to get off topic.
No, I understand. Some places they don't, but
one of the games of the week, Steelers at the Bengals.
That is a good game. That'll be a good game. But Bengals, I think they're the better team this year. Unfortunately for the Steelers, they're running into them right when they don't need to because I read earlier the loss would bring them to their, I believe, third or fourth consecutive 8-8 season.
The Steelers?
Yeah.
I'm taking the Steelers. They're going to be 8-5 after this game and be going to the playoffs strong. They're one of the scariest teams in football right now. They're so dynamic with Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown. D'Angelo Williams is playing amazing. Big Ben, of course. That whole team is playing good. The defense is clicking. The Bengals, I just don't think they're on a rocky road right now, and they could lose at any minute. They lost to the Texans. I don't think they're going to get up for this game. Colts Jaguars.
I think the Colts by like a field goal. I don't think it's as good of a game as it should be. As far from the Colts end, at least.
The way the Jags played last week against the Tennessee Titans and put up the points, I'm taking the Jaguars. I think they're going to be a better team this week, and I think that the Colts are just laying down, honestly. Chargers versus the Chiefs.
I'll take the Chargers. I think they're good enough. Phillip Rivers hasn't played that bad this year, so.
Hasn't played that bad. They're 3-9.
Phillip Rivers hasn't played that bad this year.
He hasn't been playing his best football, but. I'm taking the Chiefs. They're 7-5. They've been rolling lately and playing great football. I just don't think the Chargers have it. I think they're just playing for draft picks right now. So, Redskins versus the Bears.
Redskins, I think they're playing very well right now. I mean, that they just lost to Dallas, but Dallas is playing better than they were before. And I think the Redskins are a good team this year. So,
I'm taking the Bears. They're playing at home in Soldier Field, which is always tough. It's going to be a tough game. They came off a win last week, didn't they? Or loss. They lost last week.
I think they lost last week.
They lost last week. So, coming off a huge loss, which, yeah, they lost to the 49ers with a game-winning touchdown. Now I remember. they, you know, they need a win, and they're going to get it this week against the Redskins and give them their eighth loss. Falcons versus Panthers.
Panthers, they're just clicking on all cylinders right now.
It's going to be a close game. I think that the Falcons will come to play. It's a division game. They always play tough.
Yeah,
I think the Panthers are going to play very well. Seahawks versus Ravens.
Seahawks. I mean, the Ravens are just struggling this year, and the Seahawks have seemed to have righted the ship to some degree. Enough to, I think, get this win.
Oh, they're playing great football, Seahawks, right now. They've been on a good running streak as of late. Ever since the second half of that Cardinals game, they've been playing very, very well. So the Seahawks are going to take that game with ease. Broncos versus the Raiders in Denver.
Broncos.
Yep.
Broncos are just too good of a team.
They're playing good football right now. 10-2 in the AFCs. They're going to be top team, probably number one seed. Cowboys versus the Packers in Green Bay.
Packers. I think it's Green Bay. Lambeau's always a tough field to play in. And I think the Packers are just getting angry at their performance this year.
You said Packers, correct?
Yeah, I said Packers.
Me too. I think the Packers need this win. They're going to avenge from their weaknesses that they have, as they have had as of late. And, you know, we'll get the victory.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots versus the Texans. This is going to be a tough game.
It is going to be a tough game. I think that the Patriots are going to win because we have said in countless weeks that you don't want to face an angry Tom Brady. And I think that's what the Texans are going to face, is an angry Tom Brady. And I think the Patriots are going to get a win. I think they're going to get challenged, especially if Gronk and Edelman are out again, which apparently Gronkowski came back to practice yesterday wearing a brace.
He came back to practice but didn't practice.
But he didn't practice, but
he was at the facility, but he did not practice. He went there and then left early. It's all up to Coach Belichick right now. He says he's doing whatever he can to rehab it. My hope is he doesn't play because I am playing him this week in my championship game
for fantasy.
So I hope he doesn't play. Please, Rob, do not play. But I'm taking the Patriots in this game. I think they're going to avenge from that two games in a row loss, and get a victory against the Texans, even though the Texans are rolling right now. Giants versus Dolphins, Monday Night Football.
Got to stand true with blue. I got to go with my Giants. I think they're a good enough team to get this win. I think they'll contend with this division for the rest of the year. It's going to be tough. They have some tough games coming up past this game, but I think they can handle the Dolphins.
I'm going to take the Dolphins in this game, and not because of the rivalry, because of the Eagles and Giants. I just don't see them going. I think they're about equal with the Dolphins, player-wise. I think the Dolphins are playing good football as of late. You know, putting up points. They haven't been having the greatest season. You know, they beat the Ravens. You know, lost a big one to the Jets. You know, I think it's time for them to get a nice win, and I think this will come this week against the Giants at home. So, I think Tannehill's playing good football. So I'm gonna take the Dolphins on this one. And you know, if I'm wrong, then it's gonna come down to Week 17 when the Eagles play the Giants, and the Eagles are gonna take the NFC East championship. Thank you.
I will take that. Thanks.
Moving on to Bonnie's basketball. We only have one game this week, and it's the women's basketball playing Penn State. The women's been on a tear lately.
Absolutely.
Beating Georgetown. James Madison, who made the tournament last year and beat Tennessee. And beat UB the other night.
Beat Stony Brook in double overtime.
They've been playing very good basketball.
Six straight wins.
These girls, they're very deep in this team. Mm-hmm. You know, Miranda Drummond's been coming on strong all year. A lot of key players. McKenna, the freshman, has been playing very good basketball. A lot of bench play. This team could make a run for the A-10 championship, honestly.
I think they could.
I mean, you got Mariah Ruff, you know, Gabby Richmond. She's 6'1", tallest one up there. You know, Monty's playing well. Monty Outlaw. Katie Healy, of course, is always putting up her points every game.
Mm-hmm.
Missed a couple games because of an injury to her foot. But other than that, this team has been playing rolling, and you know, this coach Jim Crowley has been getting these ladies ready and playing very well.
Exactly. And I think they're a nice example of what we talked about earlier, which is being a team. I think they play very much as a team. I love their ball movement. The way they move the ball on offense and defense as they press up coming off defense, transitioning into offense. I love their ball movement. Nobody's making tough shots. I think they're really cycling the ball until they get a good shot. Unless the shot clock forces them to, as it does sometimes. But I think when they use the time effectively and when they use the team chemistry that they obviously have put together, well, I think that they can be the best team in this conference. I think they're challenging. And six straight wins is plenty example of that. And plus, they've already proved within that six-game win streak that they know how to stay in a game and stay determined to win a game. I mean, double overtime against Stony Brook away.
Definitely. Detroit, Toledo are all tough teams. They played them right down to the wire.
And UB.
I mean, no, not UB.
Well, not UB's not.
59-32 is not a close game.
That's why I said handled.
I mean, like they made a lot. Them. They had 22 turnovers in that game. That was the problem. If they didn't have those 22 turnovers, they're beating them by 30, 40 points. But they're playing real good basketball. They got Penn State coming into the Riley Center on set tomorrow afternoon, 1:30 p.m. tip-off. And then they get a little break. They got to play Colgate, Niagara, Canisius, but they can't lay down. And then their first A-10 game is at Rhode Island, which is a tough game.
That'll be a big test for the team, I think.
Definitely. And I think they can compete. I think right now they're playing good enough basketball where they can play. And like what you said, they're playing with team, like what we've been saying. Playing as a team. Mm-hmm. And that's huge for them. If they play as a team, continue playing as a team, they're going to get wins. And especially with Crowley with a deep bench like he has and keep rotating the girls and getting them fresh and everything. Plus, I think this fourth quarter has played a big play in this whole thing because I think it gives the girls rest halfway between the first half and second half. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it definitely is a game changer. You see the transitions, you know, when they're on a run, you know, slows them down. Slows the other team down if they're losing. Slows the other team down, you know, or it helps them pick up from a slow start. You know?
And I think it helps Crowley break down, since it's broken down into four quarters, he can break down his strategy into four different, like, he can use a different strategy in each quarter based on what situation he's in. And I think it helps him coach as far as keeping, like you said, keeping the team's pace and making sure that, let's say they struggle in the first quarter, it gives him a chance to sort of help them recollect themselves and be able to tell them what they've done wrong between quarters. So I think this breaking up in the four quarters is definitely helping the team. And I think they're rolling right now. They're firing on all cylinders. And if they keep playing like this, I don't see many teams on this that could probably stop them.
The men have the weekend off this week, and next week they will be playing South Carolina State. That'll be Jordan Tyson's first game back from his injury from his hand. It'll be his first game in the Bonnie's uniform, which we're all excited to see him go out there, and he's a big presence. I think he'll play a big part in their down low presence for the team. That'll be it for Bonnie Sports. Only the women play tomorrow, 1:30 p.m. in the Riley. Get there, support the girls to a win against Penn State and make it 7 straight.
Yep.
Well, Mike, it's we got one show left for the semester, and you know it's been a great semester. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have too. It's been great.
Everyone, be lookout for next week's top 5 college basketball teams. We'll be doing the SEC and the American Conference. And, you know, same prime time.
Same prime place.
I'm Jonathan Sawyer.
And I'm Mike DeSanto.
Have a good day, guys.